Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for the first regular season show of the 2024 season. Talking about the defense, we're doing it with our friend Coach Derek of All 22 Films. Coach, how you doing?
Good, man. Good. It was a late night last night, of course, and it's going to be another one tonight, which is fun. Last night, not as much fun, obviously, because we didn't get the win, and it was an unusual game all the way around.
Yeah, because there's something for me that's very cathartic about watching the film, calms me down. I'm like any other fan. I'm screaming at the TV set as this game's going on, and there was a lot of profanity-worthy activity on that field during the game. And at the end, when I'm analyzing the game, you know, going through the offensive line scoring and whatnot, it just kind of forces you to settle down a little bit. And
100%.
Yeah,
100%. Absolutely agree. You a little sobering, and you find where you're like, okay, where I felt -7 or -12, I'm actually -2 or -3. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, well, you know, with Lamar, which isn't the point of the show, where I felt +5, I'm like, this is +15 or +50, you know, with some of the things that we were able to get done. So no, I totally agree. It kind of centers you a little bit. I'm still, as far as defensively from a rewatch standpoint, you know, I'm still mid to late third quarter with that, but I've certainly put out because of the show and your query or request to have me on. I solely focused on defense on my channel today, so I could, you know, hopefully be prepared.
I appreciate that, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of fun. And your level of almost not prepared is just a fantastic level. Always worth talking football with you. Let's talk about the game. Get right to it and talk about, you know, the difficulty now that the Ravens have had with Mahomes in 6 outings against him. They really haven't found any kind of secret formula that really works. But there are a lot of things they found out that they can't do with Mahomes, and they've been burned, you know, multiple times in terms of, you know, excessive blitzing, you know, allowing him to make hot reads, because he'll do that as effectively as anyone in the National Football League, or maybe ever in the National Football League. He's all the things you could do at him, to throw scheme at him and throw numbers at him in terms of pressure, even to throw more complex looks in the secondary, I felt have been challenging at best.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree with that. He's one of those guys that certainly we see the outcome. We see the output, excuse me. We don't know what the input is in terms of, was it a choice play for him? How many plays do they have called? Mm-hmm. We got a lot of audio last night, odd, even, but those words were late. So there were not, some of those words, I believe, are him changing particular routes possibly to guys that are within earshot mm-hmm. for him. If they were called earlier, I think he would be communicating with the offensive line with certain words. So I think with him and all, you know, so many quarterbacks at the NFL level, I think you've got some things being changed late, as in, excuse me, as in minus two for the snap, meaning 2 seconds before the snap, that the offensive line doesn't need to know, but he's communicated it to someone, and those words could be related. Odd, could be seven or could be 11, obviously, you know, but next week it might not be odd and even. So the calls are right. going to be different, but they're going to be consistent in a way that the players can hear them. And so he's definitely one of those guys that I think changes things pre-snap based on slight coverage shows or what it looks like from you. I thought we were very reactionary, but with one of your questions that you emailed me or thoughts, slow with our reactions, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I did not think we played fast. There's multiple guys who we rely on who play fast, and we've got film of them playing fast over the course of their career that did not do so last night. It doesn't mean they're not good players. It doesn't mean they're not going to make plays for us, you know, consistently. But last night we looked slow, for lack of a better word, in my opinion. I said this in my reaction video and a little bit in one of the film studies that I put out today. I thought that we looked like we had two different defensive performance levels. In between the 20s, we got shredded. When he got down into the red zone, or maybe the 15, inside the 15, it looked like to me we weren't as scared. And so when I say scared, I mean a level of fear about being beaten deep or over the top. Mm-hmm. In between the 20s, to me, it looked like we were more, this is a generic observation, but it looked like we were more so concerned about possibly giving up bigger plays at times. I mean, at the third level, such that we were allowing things underneath and in front of us. And once we had less field to defend from a vertical standpoint, we were willing to be a little bit more aggressive and challenge. And I feel like that's maybe why we were a little bit better inside the red zone and were able to hold them to field goals a couple of times.
Now, if we go back to the 2007 Patriots, the highest scoring team of all time, they had that reputation. It was backed up by amazing statistics in terms of the percentage of times they moved from their own 20 all the way down the field for a touchdown. Okay. What that would tell you from an analytics standpoint is you better steal possessions whenever you have a reasonable chance to do it, which means go for it more on fourth down, because it doesn't really matter if you give them the ball at the 20 or the 50. It's not a big difference. Now, everything, you know, we've thought of traditionally about average quarterbacks would tell us there's a much greater chance of scoring from the 50 than there is for the 20. It's just certain quarterbacks, it doesn't really matter all that much. It's a couple extra plays for them to get to midfield. And then they have a big advantage relative to an average quarterback from that point in. It really does change the nature of the game in terms of how often you need to go for it against a team like this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think I'm not too fired up about the decision to go for it on fourth and three. I really don't like the play call. Having said that, you know, I understand that it's a different dynamic. I think the thing that concerned me with the way that we have defended them is I don't see, especially last night, and this is not going to sound great, I do not see evidence of a lot of communication pre-snap on our end that matches Mahomes and some of their communication pre-snap on their offense. And you may say, well, you know, that's a high standard. Well, it's the NFL. Our guys are getting paid to do this, and we're certainly spent a lot of money on defense, and we would expect those guys to do that. If they can't, we've got problems. I'm not saying that we have problems on a week-by-week basis. My point is, if you think back on when we had Ray Lewis and some of the pre-snap communication that was obvious to us based upon formation and some of the checks that other guys did, I did not see commensurate checks and little things being done like that by us last night. And I thought it showed. I thought Mahomes was gathering intel up till right at the point of the snap, or 1.5 seconds, maybe 2 seconds before the snap. I thought our guys got the play call from Zach Orr, or in this case, Roquan Smith, and that was it.
I'm not going to disagree with you on the communication, but I will say a lot of the things that happen on the field, they don't really have anything to do with communication. They have to do with the Mahomes finding the matchup that extraordinarily favors the Chiefs player. And that's frankly, I think, what's been a lot of what's driven it. If you look at all the pick and rub success they had last night, you can communicate a lot about that. But if it's a combination of a choice where one guy's going to get free and they have several different ways to run it and they can motion somebody to the outside, as they did on the one play where they came back, I believe it was to Rice across the on a shallow cross that Roquan Smith didn't have a chance in hell to cover. If all of their slants, they can match up against a linebacker pretty much whenever they want to. Simpson did get one PD on a slant. Nobody else did a damn thing against the slants.
Harrison was close on the last one that he saw, you know, pretty much about the same spot on the field as Simpson's PD, which was slick. You know, that was cool to see Simpson with that play, the PD that Mahomes caught. You know, he was pretty active, and so that was fun to watch. But no, I mean, I agree. Look, and some Chiefs fans did not like me saying this. The Chiefs offense under Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes benefits from pick rub concepts and schemed up pass plays more than any other offense in the league. Now that sounds like a shot at Patrick Mahomes.
It's not.
It's not. The differential between what I'm saying is, let's do it this way. Let's say the number two team in the NFL, as far as quarterback, wide receivers, tight ends, et cetera, that benefits from pick rub concepts. Let's say they're doing so 24% of the time. In this fictitious scenario, the Chiefs are, in my opinion, at like 32. 33. It's not an egregious difference that you're saying, hey, 60% of his completions are on these easy schemed up pick rub concepts. That's not what I'm saying, but it is a significant differential, in my opinion, between them and what I would consider to be the number two or three teams in the NFL. And no contact on anyone is what makes that incredibly easy to get done. The math doesn't work for us if we're constantly going to show him these four guys rushing and not change it up at all, which I thought was one of the brilliant things we did last year with Mike McDonald, rush four, but have it be a different four every time. Mm-hmm. And last night we did not seem to do that as often. It seemed to be very predictable as far as who was rushing.
We'll go into a lot of that in the probably the second half of the show when we talk about pass rushing in some great detail, but you're right. They did very little blitzing from off ball, which is one of the hallmarks of, you know, rushing a different four is you have somebody drop and you bring somebody. Only was three or four, I think it was four total blitzers on three plays the entire game from off ball.
Makes so that, sense. Yeah, that sounds right.
It's very, very low. But I wanted to react to something else you said, and now I've forgotten what it was exactly. But, you know, I know what I want. Make the analogy that if the Ravens suddenly got the reputation with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson of, oh, that's just a play action offense. All they can do is run play action because everybody's afraid of Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. Why would that be a bad thing? But I would love for that. We should aspire to be feared for exactly that. And they're feared for pick and rub concepts because it exposes inside linebacker speed against the speed they have. And I will say this. It looks like both of their draft picks, I like, you know, what Worthy showed obviously in this game was a very big deal, and I would think right away they're pretty happy about their number one draft pick where they got him. But Suamataia, despite a lot of problems, is starting at left tackle in the National Football League in his very first game, and Rosengarten is playing a backup right tackle role, playing 20 snaps in his first game, and Rosengarten was the pick before Suamataia. I'm not sure. Full results are not in. So let's not pretend like they are. But the alternative was Patrick McCary on the right side, who is a journeyman, adequate, you know, backup tackle, but is not anything special. And with Suamataia, I'm not sure even who the Chiefs had as an alternative. He was not without problems in his first game, but I think he's in a better spot developmentally and growth wise than Rosengarten is it right now.
I thought we got him three or four times last night when he was a little bit later in his set. I don't know what it is about him because I didn't watch a ton of his film in college enough to be able to identify, but it seems to be, to me, the further he gets in his set, the wider his steps get, and he seems to be more vulnerable to a change in pad level. And twice last night, I thought on our rushes, I actually put these two in my video that comes. It's actually, I think it's coming out in about 10 minutes. We were trying swipe moves and he retracted his hand. So we quote missed. And then immediately the rushers went underneath. Once was Owe, once was Ojabo. And I saw those two times I included in my video. I saw it a third time. I want to say it was Van Noy, ended up a little bit upfield. But my point is, I felt like with him, because he was exposed so much to the in the preseason and last night, we had these defined moves to try to attack him. It seemed like our guys were prepared for these defined moves. Hey, this is what will work against him. I do wonder, this is speculation, with the rotating of the tackles at times, are we providing you as a defense less intel about who the hell is in there on a series by series basis and less reliability in terms of, okay, it's third and six. But correct me if I'm wrong. Generally, when Macari's in on a series, he's full in series for that entire possession, right? There's not this element of, oh, they're subbing somebody in on third and five, you know? So it's a little bit less unpredictable than maybe I make it sound right there.
Other than for injury, I've never seen that occur in the recent rotational offensive line play that they've changed at mid series for anything. They might have changed once at the end of a quarter or something, but it's full series at a time. And one of the things with the rotating tackles last year was they staggered them, so he didn't have Fa'alele and McCary on the field at the same time,
right?
Which, you know, lends itself obviously to alternating series there. All right, let's get back. I think
I'm always one that is interested in rotating players, getting players exposure, you know, and regardless of what some of those guys, how it's turned out, like this year, rotating Fa'alele last year, I like giving them the opportunity to do that if we can. Mm-hmm. Even last night on the defensive side, you know, we did that with JAD. And of course, people have reacted and talked all day about, you know, Malik Harrison and Simpson. I don't get into those direct player to player comparisons because on some level it's a 17 game season and you've got to safeguard yourself over the course of that time for injury and not let a player sit for, well, let's do it last year. You know, Simpson sat for pretty much the entire season from a defensive standpoint, right? And we had Queen, thankfully Queen made it through the whole season. Were he to go down in week 10 or week 14 or whatever, we'd have to throw Simpson in there with less available plays on film to evaluate from last, I'm talking about last year. So I'm a fan of the rotation, to be honest with you. As it relates to the offensive line, it's certainly an anomaly though in the NFL to do that.
Yeah, and you generally have a 4-game advanced scouting window that most NFL teams use, so they would be seeing a fair number of plays. Now you don't see 4 games, obviously, if they're rotating. Maybe you see 2.5 and 1.5 for two players that are out there. But I'd be hard pressed to find an advantage on that. I think it's more you could derive an advantage from the other team not knowing what a player like Malik Harrison or Tavius Robinson can do on early downs in the base defense, because you only see that, you know, 10 times a game maybe. To me, offensive line play, and this is why I love scoring it, is such a hits per at bat kind of profession that you really have to get entirely to rate. The people who want to look at one particular play and project that those traits mean something in a larger context, I don't have the greatest deal of respect for, honestly.
Yeah, I can't identify with that. Agreed. Yeah. Across pretty much all, but offensive and defensive line, totally. Inside linebacker as well. No, I'm tracking that. I totally agree.
Okay. All right, let's move on. We got a lot to talk about here, so I don't want to shortchange this. And I know we're headed for, you know, 2.5 hours here, so we'll try and get going. This was a game where the Chiefs rolled up certainly a ton of yak. Their inside linebackers got picked on tremendously as a group. But, you know, what's your feeling on whether or not after this game, do you draw a lot of portent? Do you have a lot of concern for the inside linebackers the rest of the season in terms of their performance versus other teams after we saw what was frankly them getting picked apart pretty badly? The safeties also, frankly, in this game.
I mean, I don't like a couple of things. My first one, I think I always tend to react in a protective manner towards young people because I'm old at this point. Mm-hmm. And so for me, like I would say, I'm not overly upset with Malik Harrison or Roquan Smith or Trenton Simpson. I would say to you as a fan, if you're upset about it, you should be upset at the person who's responsible for putting them in that position. And that would be Zach Orr and the defensive staff. So I hold no anger or frustration at those guys being put in that position. Because if you're talking about three being a wide receiver, meaning There's three receivers to one side, whether it's empty or trips, and number three is a receiver, and number two is a tight end. Show me how many run concepts there are out of that look, number one. Number two, show me how many times that number three is within 2 to 2.5 yards of the tackle. So what I mean is, and there will be some pushback from people in there, your listeners, or maybe even you on this. One of the things the Cincinnati Bengals did a fantastic job of over a 2 to 2.5 year period against the Chiefs was be willing to rush 3+1, number one. Number two, be willing to help out their inside linebackers with leverage. And so last night, some of those routes that we saw win to the inside generally, mm-hmm. There was oftentimes a little outside hedge by Rashee Rice. Sometimes it was a what I call a China in. Some people call it a whip route. Ends up, you know, looking like a slant at times. And it's because, in my opinion, those guys don't have leverage to the outside. Meaning, if number two runs vertical, whoever number two is, someone is running off with them. So if three, which in this case is Rashee Rice, runs like a little out, the inside linebacker kind of had to run with that from an inside out standpoint. So therefore that little outside step that then crosses their face gets them stepping to the outside and beats them across their face because, in my opinion, they don't have leverage help to the outside. And in two of those situations last night, that's kind of what I saw. Not the first one that's completed to, I believe it's Pacheco in the left flats, and Malik Harrison just comes up and, you know, misses the tackle. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of space there, though, guys. I mean, like, there is a lot of space there for Pacheco. And show me the guys who play on our team with Pacheco in that much space. Was there 8 yards space to either side?
Right.
I'm going to say there was at least six. I mean, to either side, meaning a two-way go. I don't know who we have other than Kyle Hamilton that's going to just flat make that tackle right where it was. But, you know, Malik missed, and it's a rough matchup.
Well, Hamilton missed three tackles in this game, of course, which wasn't really good. It was a bad night for him. But
yeah, he played poorly.
The analogy that I would make to what you just said about the chance to make an open field tackle is it's much more comparable to making a special teams tackle where you're trying to go down the field. And if you look at special teams missed tackle rates, they're far higher. They're 30 to 50%. You know, some of your guys who are among the best special teams players can have a 35, 40% missed tackle rate. They're still making a lot of tackles. They're still mm-hmm. doing things that basically help other people make tackles. They're maintaining their proper leverage on the play and whatnot, maintaining exactly. their lane. But you know, that's the nature of space is it causes missed tackles all by itself or it allows for missed tackles.
100%. If those guys aren't supported from a leverage standpoint, then you're going, I mean, and they have meaning Rashee Rice or whoever has a two-way go, you're in trouble, especially at this level, you're in trouble. And so I think there's a lot to be said. Are any of the options, other options, foolproof? No, of course they're not foolproof, but mm-hmm. I saw, and it educated me when the Cincinnati Bengals were able to do that. And Ravens fans, of course, aren't going to like me bringing that up, but they absolutely slowed down that machine and they absolutely slowed down that processing. And at times were able to make bigger plays from an output standpoint than the input. I'm thinking of two plays that they had against Mahomes whereby his initial read, because I believe that more NFL quarterbacks than most people suspect have pretty much a predetermined throw. Meaning there's a high percent chance they know exactly who they're going to post snap,
even if it's the second or third read.
Correct. Correct. So they understand, okay, if I look over here at the right hash, I'm probably going to get a little bit of movement by these guys that are a little bit gullible. And then I can come back on the other side. That would give me a 3.5 yard window, you know, with read number two or three, as opposed to a 2 yard window. Because I in effect moved him over a little bit. Maybe I need to bring diagrams next time. Sorry, Ken. I just thought of this.
That's okay. That concept is actually, I don't think it's that complicated at a notional level to say he's using his eyes to manipulate other defenders with the first two reads. And then he's going to the guy he always expected to throw to.
Yeah. Those guys oftentimes allow themselves to be manipulated as well, but they're also asked to play so many coverages that you kind of can't blame them when you're asked to play six or seven different coverages as a nickel or inside linebacker over the course of, I mean, hell, sometimes it's six different coverages over the course of six or eight different plays, you know, so your reaction is your area of responsibility. Let's put it that way, simplistically, is sometimes different drastically from snap to snap. So I don't hold any ill will or frustration, maybe is the word for those guys. And I know that other people don't share the same opinion. I would say you know, why aren't the guys who are getting paid to be coaches and responsible for putting them in a better position doing their job better? Because I don't think they did.
Well, that's a fair way to put it. I think, you know, even the coach is limited certainly in what options he has to respond to things like this. And when I see, you know, okay, the inability to decode the pick and rub routes was part of the problem, but also they missed a bunch of tackles. You know, they missed 19% of their tackles in this game. The coach can't do anything about that. He's just got to hope that number improves. The Chiefs blocked incredibly well in level two. We are playing a high quality opponent. Some of the credit goes to them in terms of their ability to be able to do what they want. But, you know, Ravens have great offensive line coaching. I sit there and I watch the Chiefs and I'm jealous as hell about what their guys can do to square up in level two and make blocks. Creed Humphrey knows exactly what the hell he's doing. He has I'm not saying Linderbaum isn't pretty close to him, but I think Humphrey's probably the better level two blocker, even though he's not as fast as Linderbaum. He runs towards a guy and he starts to take slower steps, and these guys do not lunge. They don't lose their feet the way the Ravens linemen, you know, have for the last decade. And that's even with, you know, outstanding schematic offensive line, footwork-based coaching with Dallas Sanders that's been terrific. I look at the Chiefs. They're at another level in terms of their level two blocking.
You're talking about, like, probably more than, I guess you'd say almost, we used to break it down, like, how far after the snap, how do I say this? The further we get past the snap in terms of seconds, the less control we have as a coach. Okay, so I'll think of the play that Trenton Simpson made that he batted in the air that Mahomes caught, you know, which of course, if it's intercepted, obviously it's a huge play for us, but if it's even incomplete, we save a heck of a lot of time. So an amazing play by Mahomes, but equally sick by Trenton Simpson. You know, there's a 2-on-1 in the middle of the field, mm-hmm. and Rashee Rice is going to catch that ball and get the first down. We as coaches, this is going to be poorly worded, so forgive me. Trenton Simpson made that play completely individually. No one coached him 6 seconds or 5 seconds after the snap to do that. That was just reaction, athleticism, and awareness and adaptability. You know, there's no technique on practicing what he did. So right. on some level, but what you're saying is consistently seeing better blocking out in space. So there's got to be something that they're practicing to promote that. Yeah. But we always felt like, again, this may be simplistic, the further along the play develops, the less control we have as coaches over how to promote the positive outcomes. And so for whatever the Chiefs are doing, what you're describing, because I believe it, is brilliant coaching, because they're controlling more of the outcome the longer the play persists.
They're reducing the defense's ability to control the outcome.
Yeah. That's difficult. That's a difficult thing, in my opinion. Perhaps I didn't get that thought out, but you have control immediately over 2.5 to 2.9 seconds, something like that. Once you get beyond 3.5 seconds or something like that, maybe it's even 4.2. I think you have less control as a coach over some of the things that occur. So what you're describing is consistently improved behavior, outcomes by their offensive linemen in space where other teams, the Ravens included, have consistently demonstrated difficulty.
I think it's more fundamental than that. It's not, you're not teaching the dance steps to a counter play where everybody's really has to know their footwork, not trip over each other, know the depth right, know how you're moving down that line. The first guy has a big advantage in terms of looking for a block, but even the trailer on that counter play, he often doesn't have an obvious block that he needs to make. He may have a set of targets in order, but he's looking for work. Yeah. And that's where a whole lot of fundamental understanding from that backside guy needs to be. And it's the same in level two on a screen pass. I mean, you know, basically, you sent the hunters off out into the woods looking for targets there, and they have to find them as best they can. And I think that, you know, approaching a faster player with smaller steps, cutting the angle down, all that is probably something the Chiefs practice very well, because they do it so much better than the other teams I see. They have a great interior set of linemen. They're veteran and Humphrey, Tooney and Smith, who are outstanding, but they also just do that so damn well. And I'm not trying to compare them to Cleveland and, you know, Falele in terms of their abilities in level two. I'm trying to compare them to, you know, Zeitler and Linderbaum and somebody else who'd been good at left guard for the Ravens in the distant past.
Yeah, I didn't think we were overly physical defensively. And that goes along with, you know, what we talked about, you know, maybe 10 minutes ago, the pick and rub concepts. You cannot destroy every single one of those. But when any offense gives you intel, and I said this after the AFC Championship game, I have to reflect on that. There were times last night and there were times in the AFC Championship game where they gave us something. And when I say gave us something, it means aligned in a manner with receivers slash tight ends such that we can go 1 for 2, meaning we can make contact with someone and we can impede or influence 2 routes by only making contact with 1 player. And, I will again refer to the Bengals. They did that consistently over the 2.5 year period where they interrupted Mahomes' post-snap processing. And we, in the 2 games we've played against the Chiefs, have done none of that. Okay. Last year, Kelce is 11 for 11. And we have 4 different instances where they gave us something, meaning he is within 2 to 2.5 yards of the tackle. And someone is nearby, either outside leverage or just inside leverage, such that they could touch him. And we never did it. And last night we had the same thing. I'm not saying that, this is all you have to do. But if you can impede his processing 0.2 seconds or 0.3, you have given other guys opportunities to make plays. I would say that that is coaching and preparation for the specific threat that you have. And Ravens fans won't like this, in my opinion. I didn't see any of that last night. Let me rephrase that. I didn't see much. And that should be our expectation level.
You're saying that should be our expectation level for the near future for Zach Orr, you're saying, really?
The entire staff. Because, look, reality is we lost a great defensive staff. It ain't all on Zach Orr's shoulders. There's a lot of guys that were great coaches that are now defensive coordinators, or they've moved on and they're position coaches. So we retained Chuck Smith, we retained Zach Orr, promoted him as well. Mm-hmm. And so, we lost a lot of guys. In my opinion, that's where we've got to get. We are not there yet as it relates to the Chiefs. Maybe, 4 months from now, maybe we can be, but we've got to play a different brand of defense with when they give us something. If they don't give us anything, meaning everyone is distended from the tackle, further than 4 yards out from the tackle, and number 3 is or is not a receiver, meaning the 3rd receiver in from the sideline, they haven't given us anything. So we can't take anything. In that case, we're probably operating in a 50-50 proposition or maybe a 40-60 in Mahomes' favor. But when they give us something and we can switch that dynamic to 60-40, we've got to take it. And so far, we have not been physical post-snap with the Kansas City Chiefs at all.
What you've described here, if the possibility of influencing 1 route with 2 routes with 1 hit that you would make, 1 physical contact. And, it could be like, it won't be as dramatic necessarily as Hines Ward coming across the middle and getting knocked down by Jared Johnson. But it could be something where just contact or forces to move around or whatnot. But it's the opposite. The defense is imposing essentially a reverse pick or rub on that receiving group.
And you have influence. Yes. No. Ken, you described it extremely well. And I think part of it is related to, and I expect some of your listeners to provide pushback on this, and that's fine. What is the return on consistently lining up with 4 and bringing those same 4? What is the return on that investment? I think when you're facing Mahomes and this Chiefs offense, as it stands right now, the return on that is low. It doesn't mean that magically bringing a different 4 is going to work. But I think there are times where you have to start thinking about rushing a different 4, which Mike McDonald and the Ravens did brilliantly last year, right? And we all remember it as being so amazing because it was. But we saw a very different defense last night. To me, we looked very vanilla from a rush standpoint, though we had some wins. We had some wins. Again, I've got a video coming out pretty much right now that displays some of that. Also, a 3+1, meaning a delayed 4th man rusher whose job it is to impede or get hands on someone and then rush. And that people will say, well, 3-man rush doesn't work in the NFL. Go back and watch the Bengals against the Chiefs in consecutive AFC championship games and consecutive regular season games. I have it at 21 different 3-man rushes. Now, some of them are 3+1. So there's a 3 and then a late 4th whose job it is to jam and then rush. It's, guys like Hubbard, Trey Hendrickson and others. And we have guys who Calvin, he got hurt last night, but he's perfectly suited to do that. He did that with the Patriots, for years. And so in my opinion, we were very vanilla. Maybe that was intentional, but I thought we were reactionary, vanilla, and not physical last night. And I don't think it's wrong for us to point that out, even though we're all huge fans of Zach Orr's story and where we are, and we've got 16 games left. I think we're going to get better. But as far as last night's film, defensively for me, we got a long ways to go in between the 20s.
All right. Well, fair enough. That is one of the questions is how much do we take from this as being it's Patrick Mahomes, it's him picking on our weakest players, which is going to be the biggest mismatches they have. I think that is some of it, but I think there's other issues involved too, and we'll see how much this plays out. We got to keep this moving along at a little faster pace here, so I'm going to move on. One thing I was very upset by was Brent Urban being sat for this game. I never want to go in an NFL game with four defensive linemen. Even if you're playing two every play, it's a rotational position. The Ravens have never had guys who played a huge number of snaps there, not in the last 15 years anyway. It's something that just bothers me incredibly that we'd go into that. And I really don't get.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back, too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Why having an extra special teams player, and it, you know, there are multiple guys that they left active, Holman, Ross, and guys at the end of the roster, Kane. I mean, you know, all these things are primarily probably get an advantage on the new kickoff. Yeah, they'll be involved in some punt plays, but Urban is a hell of a kick blocker, and you took him off the roster.
Yeah, he's and who do you trust more out of those players you listed? It's Brent Urban. It's Brent Urban, number one. Number two, I love what the Chiefs did with the, quote, dynamic kickoff. They totally destroyed it, and I thought it was hilarious to watch because it was one of my first reactions was if we have a great defense, which they do, although I thought by the end of the game we had them. Mm-hmm. You know, our offense had them. If we have a great defense, I'm just going to kick it in the end zone and we're going to play defense from the negative 30. And I expect the NFL to address that at some point, being the, you know, huge monopoly that it is, and not admit that they were wrong, because that's what good teams are going to do. I agree with you on Brent Urban. I would have preferred to have him active. There was two situations where I believe both of them was Broderick Washington ended up in little, like a tight five technique to the boundary and was left unblocked in some space. And people were able to navigate that. I think he might have been
tackle on Mahomes on a right. Yeah, that's the play.
So, in my opinion, I would suspect that whatever the defensive position is called, that ends up with an interior lineman, general interior lineman,
uncovered on the end. Yeah,
uncovered on the end. That would have been Brent Urban's position. So I do think there's something to be said for that. I trust him. I think the Ravens staff obviously trusts him. So that was surprising to me. So I agree with you. You know about that. The whole roster thing is so limiting anyway, so it's frustrating to discuss.
Just to go back to that for a second, though, the Chiefs kicked the ball in the end zone six times, they gave the 30-yard line every time. The Ravens kicked to try and pooch, to try and, you know, get returns out of it, to force the returns, and the Chiefs ended up with an average starting field position of the 28.4 on the Ravens' five kickoffs. So for 1.6 yards per kickoff and 8 yards in total, they deactivated Brent Urban for that game. And suffered an incredible risk. That is just not a good risk-adjusted return on that at all. The things that can go wrong when you have four defensive linemen are just so significant relative to 8 yards of field position. And I don't know if the expectation was that high. I don't know if the expectation was as high as 8 yards.
I think it speaks to the Chiefs' desire to control as much as they can. And in this case, you're posing zero risk to yourself by kicking into the end zone and just playing defense because you trust your defense. Somebody falls down on the kickoff, whatever. I have been out there immediately as one of the people who was not excited at all about the quote dynamic kickoff. I don't think there's anything dynamic about it at all. And I don't think there will be. And I was not surprised that someone kicked it off in the end zone every time. If I were coaching, that's exactly what I would do.
Yeah, it definitely is also a reduced injury risk. So I like it from that perspective. From the Chiefs' perspective, I'd kick it in the end zone too and give it up to the 30. It's just, I don't think there's enough payoff from it.
Absolutely.
Let's move on. We'll talk about the first game from Zach Orr here because this happens every time we start talking football and get down these great.
It's my fault.
No, I think it's both of our faults because I can't stop myself from getting in a great discussion. I don't get to talk to people like you all the time. I have a number of great guests. I love them. They're all important to me in some way, but they're also all different. And so you get highly technical guests like you. I want to talk the technical side of football.
It's a good thing to have a completely diverse group as far as, you know, it's fun. Hey, maybe someday off season or after the Ravens win the Super Bowl, you can host or someone can host something with 8 or 10 different people. I watch what Coach Evans does on Monday night with so many mm-hmm. different people. And I think they talk about a couple of teams, the Ravens and maybe the Panthers, but you know, that's what a coaching staff has. That's what a coaching staff does is you've got people that coach different positions and different opinions. And, you know, so far to relate it to the Chiefs where we are, you know, our process has not been able to produce a win in either of the last two games that we played against them. So that process of gathering multiple opinions and trying to find some kind of way to out scheme, out coach, out control the other team, you know, it hasn't worked out in our favor.
All right. I want to go back to Zach Gore for a minute and talk about some specifics in terms of who he was putting on the field, different sets of personnel and packages he used before we get into exactly some of the details about how those plays worked out in terms of coverage concepts or anything, just the package, just the players he put on the field. The big interesting thing to me was that Zach Gore didn't immediately come out as a committed nickel guy. And you think about Zach Gore's background, three down weak side linebacker. That's where he made his name for himself before he got the defect or whatever was noticed about his neck. He was a committed nickel. Ravens played committed nickel under Dean Pease. It was largely because Zach Gore was so good at the weak side linebacker. They didn't immediately turn Simpson into a three down linebacker. They took him out on early downs for Harrison, which means they didn't entirely trust Simpson as a run defender. I thought he had a pretty good preseason, but they took him out for that. And then they also took him off the field for three dime snaps. So he didn't play every snap then either. It's very interesting. I've been pointing out that I don't think we know who Trenton Simpson is necessarily this offseason. But do you get a sense of where Zach is headed with this? Do you think he has a tendency that we'll see way out towards being more of a three down weak side linebacker guy? Or do you think we'll see lots of variation the whole season?
I think it could be lots of variation. I think it could be my one thought about that. First of all, I thought of you immediately when I saw the dime package in on Ardarius Washington's near interception. And as an aside, that is a play that supports what I said earlier, which is Mahomes absolutely thought he was going to Xavier Worthy on that throw, and to the exclusion of pretty much everyone else involved with that route, and threw it anyway and almost got it intercepted. So the difference between a great outcome and an interception sometimes is very small. And Ardarius he made a brilliant play. But I thought of you immediately when I saw that dime look out there. I was like, yes, I know Cannell like that, number one. And number two, I did, because I'm a fan of if we're going to move Kyle Hamilton around, then dime should be something that we look at because of his unique skill set. And it's so paradoxical to what I thought. I thought that Trenton Simpson perhaps would have more difficulty in coverage as a boundary side inside linebacker away from the nickel. And like you just pointed out, he was in on those downs and was all off on some early downs, which it proved to be probably a mistake, at least last night. But there's going to be times where Malik Harris is on the field and in early downs. Kyle Van Noy goes down last night. If he had gone down earlier in the game, we could have seen a situation where Malik Harrison's playing, a little bit more edge defender and possibly walking back to the boundary if we want to get into a three inside linebacker look. So I think it'll be variable. I think we could very easily get to week four or five and we could say, hey, there's some real genius here in what Zach Orr's doing over the course of games and so far in the season, because he's presenting different looks to the offensive coordinator such that it's not reliable for you. You know, what play call you can make, that shuffling or reshuffling of the deck between nickel, traditional nickel with perhaps Marlon Humphrey in there, and then also dime, I think is a cool dynamic. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I mean, I do too. I like a lot of variation. I like going to penny occasionally or jumbo nickel is what I call the thing, because I want the packages to sound consistently, even though I know the one inside linebacker with the five-man front is a lot of teams call it penny. I liked moving from that back and forth from a standard nickel to a jumbo nickel occasionally, just to show a different look to the defense, I think to the offense is worth it. But in this game, the dime even wasn't the standard dime. It didn't look like it wasn't Hamilton lining up as an inside linebacker in the way it was with Levine. Hamilton was out in coverage. There wasn't anybody in that, middle of the field trying to play zone kind of look.
Yeah, Roquan.
Roquan is alone, but I'm saying there wasn't the weak side linebacker position was vacated for purposes of that. Yeah.
Yep. I like it. I wonder about, and just thinking back on what we were able to accomplish last year, being so multiple and versatile, my projection is that Zach Gore is probably going to, in those situations, third and five, third and six, Zach Gore is probably going to have multiple looks such that you as the offensive coordinator, the play caller, are a little more hesitant about knowing what the coverage is probably going to be. And I'm a big fan of it, even though, we didn't apparently gain a ton from it last night. Some would say, we lost the game, number one, and number two, the Chiefs averaged 7 yards per play. But I'm a big fan of that. especially when we have everyone healthy. You know, our Darius and Millett being dedicated nickels, you know, generally, and then Jackson and Williams and you know, Kyle Hamilton. I feel like we're going to get, it's possible we could get to a moment where week three or four, all of a sudden we're like, okay, we're in dime a lot. And Kyle Hamilton is that dime guy, but to your point, not a dedicated boundary side, you know, away from the nickel dime guy, could be very multiple. And I think that might be a great usage for our personnel.
Mm-hmm. The options are certainly over there. And I think you take away from Hamilton if you put him in a pure dime spot. If you put him in the spot of the weak side linebacker, I think you actually take away things that he can do. I like him much more in the slot because I think he controls the strong side of the football field very effectively when you do that. But anyway, it's enough of that. I did want to say, I'm not sure Millett has a job when he comes back. Ardarius Washington, they couldn't find room for in the back end, even though I didn't think Eddie Jackson played all that great in this game.
He didn't look as quick as Ardarius. I didn't think Jackson looked nearly as quick. And so it's a good thing to have. Let's do it this way. It's a good thing to have all three of them, you know, in my opinion.
Sure.
I think I trust Arthur Millett on the field, and I think I trust Arthur Millett and Ardarius Washington. Eddie Jackson, he didn't look as quick last night to me. So we'll see.
Eddie Jackson, an older player who's had some recent very poor results on field with the Bears, and lots of excuses were made for it. But for the last 4 years, he's averaged giving up 10 yards per target. And that's a long time. And I know he was a pretty damn good football player for 2 years at the beginning of his career. Maybe it was even three. I'm trying to think. I think this is his seventh year in the league. The last four, he's averaged 10 yards per target. I believe it's the first two, but I may be wrong. He had the exception, all the touchdowns and whatnot that he scored defensively. So there was questions about him coming in. But one thing about that Ravens safety room is incredibly deep in terms of what they bring. And the ability to fill in at other positions is remarkable. I mean, Ardarius Washington just spent the entire summer playing safety. And he's immediately, the very first game, the switch has been flipped and he's strictly a slot corner again. Because that's where they need him. And they can replace the dime back from safety. They can replace the slot corner from safety. So they have injuries at inside linebacker. I think that's where they fill it from, is from that safety room. At slot corner, certainly they can fill it in the same way. And of course, they can come up and play big nickel from there as well. It's just it's rich. The guy they can't replace right now, they just don't have a guy to replace him at all, is Marcus Williams.
Absolutely.
They don't have another free safety on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Great play last night that he made. I mean, I know some would say, oh, Juju's got to catch that football. It's a great challenge. You know, split second late, maybe 0.3 seconds late, but he's there on the challenge and able to hold him out of the end zone. I thought, it to my point from earlier, I think we played better red zone defense than we did between the 20s. Yep. We looked like a team. I use basketball analogies a lot. We looked like a team from a basketball standpoint that needs to play zone and not man, because we had, and I don't mean this from from a football standpoint and playing man. So don't take that anyone as a direct comparison, but we looked like basketball teams who can't play man defensively because we've got two or three matchups that are in the offense's favor. And so therefore we have to play zone. My comparison breaks down a little bit there, but being inside of the red zone in that comparison is the playing zone in basketball, where we have less space to cover and we aren't worried about the vertical threat. We looked really good there. And hey, let's be honest, that's been some Ravens defenses MOs before. Hey, you might get in the red zone or close to it, but we're going to hold you to a field goal and we're going to get enough touchdowns or maybe a turnover such that limiting you to three field goals instead of two touchdowns and a field goal is going to be the difference and help us win 23-21. So that's okay. That's an okay thing, I think, to be honest with you. In some ways, it can be an asset.
Yeah, it's definitely I understand the concept you're making. It's definitely a case where the Ravens in compressing the field definitely had less, and appropriately less, fear for what the Chiefs' big speed advantages. You know, their ability to get these matchups on Rice that require space to develop or with Worthy. Now Worthy did score from the 21-yard line, but still. I think very effective in terms of the closer you get, the less
anybody could have scored on that reverse. You could have been a 4-6 and score on that reverse. I don't think you needed to be a 4-2 to score on that reverse. It was wide open. It was well blocked, but again, we weren't overly physical. I didn't see where, you know, you couldn't say after two or three possessions, wow, we are the more physical team. In fact, in our Discord, some of my guys, I don't think liked it. I said, hey, I'm going to be honest with you right now. they are the more physical team. I think it was about 3 or 4 minutes into the second quarter, even though we had the first drive that was impressive and overcame the penalties. I said, they're the more physical team. They were. That flipped, I think, mid to late third quarter. You could see their defense was gassed. And one thing we used to talk about to our kids as coaches was, we only play 4 quarters, but we're going to prepare as if it's a 5-quarter game for your stamina and your ability to continue to compete. If that's a 5-quarter game, Kansas City has 4 or 5 defensive players who don't make it through the 5th quarter because they were done. You know, they were done. The cumulative effect of what Lamar can do, scrambling, throwing the football, you know, and designed runs, really, I thought, wore them down. Whereas our defense, in some ways, did get settled. Unfortunately, we had the blown coverage that, you know, you can't give up scores like that against right. teams that can execute like the Chiefs. That blown coverage was inexcusable.
Well, you can really see it from, I mean, it's really from earlier on in the game, but the Ravens had a high percentage of ample time and space opportunities in the pocket. Definitely in the second half, but even from the second quarter on, the first quarter and into 2 drives through the second quarter, they only had 3 ample time and space opportunities, which is, that's probably about normal. And then it really picked up and they probably had about 35 to 45% ample time and space the rest of the game, which is,
you mean
which is outstanding.
Our offense.
Yeah. Our offense had 3 second pockets against the Chiefs gassed defense. Which is, I think, what you were describing in terms of physicality, yes. was those guys are not ready to keep going. Yeah, I thought that was a big factor, and you know, it was easy to see that happen even without Derrick Henry having a big part in this game because the Ravens won the snap count 74-50. And I'll say this: it's a damn good thing they did, because if they'd been on the other side of that 74-50, this would have been, you know, a 40-10 blowout or something, because the defensive line would have been shot.
If we didn't have enough guys, to your point about Brent Urban, yeah, to your point. Yeah, no, I agree. And then there's something to be said, too, for, you know, whether it's offensive line or anything. You know, and this was an exercise that we would do occasionally against really good teams. And I think this will speak to something that you mentioned to me pre-show, and we don't have to spend any time on it. But sometimes with offensive linemen, let's grade you only in the fourth quarter. And so I think if you were to look at our offensive line grades and only in the fourth quarter, yes, you might be getting a compromised version of the Chiefs defensive line, but your grading scores would probably be different if you omitted some of the poor stuff that we had in the first quarter and a half. So, you know, that you got to grade the entire game, but I think it speaks to the competitive nature of some of your guys when their fourth quarter performance is way better than the first quarter and a half. So I feel cautiously optimistic about the whole thing, even though you've asked me to look at the defense in a targeted way. I am not overly positive tonight as we talk, you know, less than 24 hours after the result.
All right. There is a tendency for all humans to overreact to any news. And I maintain concern over what's happened. I have some of the same concerns you have as Orr, probably not with Orr, not to the greatest same degree. I thought that we did not see adaptation from him during the game to the degree I would like, but we did see a lot of attempts to try different things, whether they were prepackaged, whether he said, I'm going to have all
pre-snap,
these
cans, right.
Yeah, a different cans of soup, you know, ready to yep. call here kind of thing. But he definitely had a lot of different choices that he made. I thought that the rotation at left corner, by the way, getting Wiggins and JAD. I mean, those guys both played great in this game.
I thought that was smart. I love it. I don't know about you, but I'm a huge fan of that. I think for people, you know, just from a people perspective, keeping them engaged. My background and my reference there is kids. I'm trying to keep a 14 or 15 year old kid engaged in 2024. You know, when I coach 2013 or 14, whatever, I'm trying to keep them engaged in practice next week. I got to reward them with 6 or 8 or 10 plays. These are different guys. They're all getting paid millions of dollars or, you know, hundreds of thousands in some cases. And I was glad to see them out there and I thought they looked fine. I would compare them to Ronald Darby last year, except they're both more athletic than him at this point. Guys that can come in and give you some reps and such that if a player goes down, Marlon Humphrey, Brandon Stevens, whoever, you've prepared them for that. I thought that was brilliant. So, you know, to your point, there is more good to provide or analyze than we thought after during the loss or immediately thereafter. Like we said earlier in the show, the film can sometimes be sobering, I guess, or sobering in a good way.
Yeah, the the cornerback play in particular. And Stevens got beat on a couple consecutive plays. I think three for the game. He gave up, you know, 30 or 40 yards on three catches. And Humphrey, he obviously expected something different on the back end. I think, you know, it might have been Hamilton. It could have been another safety. But Humphrey is rarely wrong in terms of his post-play emotion. When he looks around and he looks pissed off, it's because he should be pissed off.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think could he have gotten a little bit bigger piece of Worthy there to maybe, you know, maybe 10%, 12%, something like that, maybe. But yeah, absolutely. There should be help over the top there on some level. It's not directly over the top. The little bit of a misnomer that we all use, it's not like a vertical line from Humphrey to the end zone that's parallel to the sideline, and a player should be there. That player's going to be leveraged inside some. Yeah, that player's going to be leveraged inside some. So, but and that speaks to the preparation of the defense. We can't have that. It's the bottom line. We are a professional football organization with a high level expectation and standard for the defense, and that can't happen, particularly in that situation. I am less impressed with Xavier Worthy than everyone else. I will tell you, I thought his reverse touchdown was one that 70% of slot receivers score on in the NFL who are in that position. Number one and number two, that catch. I mean, I can't say that he had to do anything that was anything special about it. Doesn't mean he's not going to score 8 or 10 touchdowns this year. My point is, I didn't think there was anything he did organically to create those situations. The two times I thought I saw him in situations to, quote, win at the catch point, he did not.
Okay, so that's Darius Washington. I'm trying to think of what the other instance was of Worthy.
Ball wasn't thrown to him. I thought it was a deeper out to the right-hand side. Ball wasn't thrown to him.
Right, so he had three targets in the game, and then he had the run, of course. Okay, well, that's certainly good. One thing you can look at is that the cornerbacks on the Ravens did a really adequate job, or better than adequate, of dealing with Worthy speed, I thought. And you know, Juju Smith-Schuster was not a part of this game. I don't know how many total snaps he played. Rice had a fine game by any standard, but he wasn't really torching the Ravens corners.
Agreed.
Yeah, what he did was crossing, mostly was where he did a lot of damage.
Yep. Choice routes on the inside, isolated against inside linebackers in space, you know, as we talked about earlier in the show. So no, I totally agree. I think I know Mahomes was efficient from a pass. I know Mahomes was efficient from a pass perspective, you know, completions to attempts and stuff, but I did not think that he, quote, shredded our DBs at all from our outside corners. Brandon Stevens gives up the catch to Kelsey on the 32. You know, we should finish the sack, first of all, from Owe. Second of all, you know, Brandon Stevens is trying to lock up on Kelsey, and Kelsey loses him. Kelsey is – this is going to sound so weird. In those situations, him being slower than some of the outside corners that get matched up against him – almost helps him, because he'll slightly move to one side and the fast twitch corner will kind of overreact to that. And so there's guys in basketball who are a little bit slower than normal, and it almost can benefit them. And I feel like that's almost where Kelsey is in some of those situations, not the whole game, in some of those situations where the corner's back is turned to the quarterback and it's unsettled. And in this case, Mahomes was able to find Kelsey. You know, great play by those two for a 32-yard gain. We finished the sack there, and I think there's less points on the board for the Chiefs. I understand people are like, oh, the Chiefs dropped two passes, could have really closed this game out. Yeah, we had plays we didn't make either. You know, we could have intercepted the pass at the end there with Owe.
Completion to Zay Flowers.
Exactly. We have drop. So, I mean, there's things on both sides. I don't think we didn't play well last night. I don't think we played well in the AFC Championship game, and we've lost to them by a touchdown both times. The margin is not that small. The margin is not so large such that it can't be overcome. So I think that's why we're frustrated with the defense for not being, you know, a little bit more physical and taking away some of the things that, you know, they were able to beat us on last night.
I think, you know, physicality is part of it. I do think there's going to need to be different looks that they show Mahomes this next time around, which means different players on the inside. You know, you go back to the classic example in Ravens history is probably the 2018 AFC wildcard game where they played the Chargers, and the Chargers played all but one snap, I believe, with seven defensive backs on the field. I mean, it almost looks like try something like that against Mahomes. You can't really, because they're big and they have a physical offensive line that'll get after you, and they'll know to run at that. But you'll slow them down with that. And I think if you do play a You can't really take Roquan off the field, or you end up playing like a 31 dime or something if you 31 quarter if you really want to get after something that extreme. But I don't think if you had a lead on the Chiefs and you're trying to defend it, I don't think going to seven defensive backs is necessarily a bad answer at all. I wonder if this team and this organization would have the willingness to either take Roquan off the field or move him into a roaming pass rusher in those situations where you have three down linemen.
Yeah, we've got options, and I don't think the differential is so large that there aren't things that you can do better. Obviously, on the offensive side, we have things that we could do better, but we've got an absolute competitor who is pissed off at the football world on that side. And I think we owe it to, the entire fan base and team, organization, the offense, and him to be better prepared defensively from a physicality standpoint. And
you're talking about Lamar Jackson and him on the sidelines.
Yes. I mean, yes, absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
Just to be clear. I mean,
well, and just the force with which he played, it looked, at this, who describes a quarterback, or when do you ever say about a quarterback, hey, he played with great force? You normally talk about like a basketball player who's consistently taking the ball to the basket. It's almost what he reminded me of last night, like the 6'7", 6'8" athletic guy who says, I'm pissed off and I'm going to the basket 30 times tonight. You're going to have to deal with me there. Meet me there. And so they end up at the foul line. He just reminded me of a guy playing with a shit ton of force. And so I love it. I love to see the maybe effort's not the word, driven to succeed. He was pissed off during the game from the standpoint of the way he played. I'm not talking about theatrics on the sideline. I don't care about it. I'm talking about how he played. And so I didn't see a commensurate level of we're here to win and compete on the defensive side from a physicality standpoint. And that, I don't know, you put the helmet on, you put the shoulder pads on, you play defense, especially for the Ravens. That's what you're there to do. I didn't see that. And we got 16 games left. It's not an overreaction, I don't think, to say I didn't see that.
To look back, it's never an overreaction to say this is how I saw this game. And you're doing exactly that. I think that's the thing. My question would be, how much portent comes out of this game? I personally don't put a ton of portent. I think the Ravens can be very Agreed. Adaptable to what happened. And I think,
It's probably good for us, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's good for us to have lost a tiebreaker to the Chiefs. I'm not there, but okay. Let me move on. Talk a little bit about
packages. I'll make no bones about it. I want the AFC Championship game to be in Kansas City.
You don't want it here.
No. I think you saw it last night. We've got a guy that leans on people. Lamar's not leaning on physically the defense for the Kansas City Chiefs, but his force of play absolutely last night, I thought, wore them down. It reminded me of the 49ers game. Was it Christmas night last year? The one third down scramble late in the second quarter, and another play where he moved around and found Likely down near our own end zone. You saw 49ers defensive linemen and inside linebackers after the play kind of just their shoulders sink and look like, oh my God, this is what we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. I thought we saw that last night, mid to late third quarter on. I know the Chiefs, get the big touchdown from Xavier Worthy. That's what bothers me so much about, the lack of defensive preparation. And on some point is that we ended up, I think, defensively making their defense play softer, making their defense play with less speed compared to the first quarter and a half.
I think Collinsworth did the best job of explaining it. And they ended up just rushing three with a spy on a lot of that last drive, by the way. But they're basically saying, Lamar's just telling them, you're rushing four. I got six gaffes I can work with. And that's just the way it is on the football field. You got five linemen that creates six gaps to either side. Yep. They cannot cover them all, no matter how good at two gapping, or if they want to be great two gappers, they're certainly going to bring the pass rush down to nothing. And there was some of that going on, but it's just a marvelous game from Jackson and being able to exploit that. I thought he moved around the pocket with tremendous grace in this game, and to be only sacked once in a game like that, where the Chiefs clearly were. They were making an effort to get after him. They brought, by the way, a bunch of, and I don't want to go too much into this because I want to save this for the offensive shows, but they brought a 7-man pressure on the first play of the second drive of the game. It was a 7-0 pressure, and the Ravens blocked it up and got ample time and space. That happens so fucking rarely. I can't even tell you.
You think that dissuaded them from doing that some?
Quite possibly. Quite possibly, because it was all fours, threes, fours, and fives pretty much the rest of the way. They rushed six. Well, two plays later, they rushed six again, and they rushed six once in the second half, maybe twice. I'm looking at it here. It looks like they did it twice in the second half.
Certainly appeared to bring less 5- and 6-man pressures than we had heard about so much in the offseason, the Ravens having trouble with it, and even then we saw at times last year in the playoffs with the Texans and the Chiefs. So, no, I totally agree with you. I think we owe it to, you know, those guys on the offensive side for the defense to play with commensurate or equal or even superior physicality and effort level. And I didn't see that. Hey, 8 quarters against the Chiefs. I want to see a little bit more of Roquan or someone making contact with Mahomes. I want to see some more of those situations where we're a little bit overly physical. It's football, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, outstanding discussion. Always great, Derek. Always at a very high level in terms of what you bring to the show. And I really appreciate that. Tell folks where they can look at your stuff, maybe talk football with you online.
YouTube and Twitter is pretty much all I can handle from a platform standpoint, all 22 films. Twitter is X, I guess, at this point. I'm trying to, you know, put content out there when I can. NFL related, generally Ravens, some Lions, some college football. And then we do have a, you know, Discord related to my Patreon, not to necessarily, you know, give myself a shout out, but that is something that's a protected community for Ravens fans such that they don't have to deal with trolls and we can interact in a way that is direct and absent fear of someone quote tweeting you, you know, how ridiculous you look for making the statement in week 1 or week 2 and bringing it back. So it's a protected community. And so, and I rely on that, to be honest with you, to stay sane as far as reading football. And to be honest with you, from a selfish standpoint, those guys and gals who, you know, join the Patreon and get into the Discord, they help me, to be honest with you. I'll throw ideas at them. Hey, do you guys like this idea? Or what do you think of this? And they'll push back or twist it or whatever. So from a selfish standpoint, man, it's helped me. So that's, you know, YouTube, Twitter, and then the Discord that we have that is a protected Ravens community. That's my jam. That's where I can operate for Ravens stuff when I'm not, you know, meeting with guys like you for podcasts.
Outstanding. Well, Derek, really appreciate you coming on. Other folks out there, hit me up on Twitter if you're interested in doing a film study short. I'm always interested in doing new topics. If you've got an idea, particularly if you're pissed off about something, this is a great week to do it. I got a couple of days I can spend recording some programs that will go when they have a chance to go. In particular, if you're pissed off about something that happened, you have a different look on things, want to examine something that you don't think is being examined, this is a great time to do it. Derek, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.